Well, first off, Curtis Pope is supposed to teach this class. I was just going to be his middle inning relief pitcher, but he was getting sick Sunday, and he's worse today. So, and this is not the weather he needs to be out in. So, y'all help me all you can. It's going to be a. You understand what the time is, the schedule for between. Oh, I do need to tell you how I, 35 years ago, before y'all were even thought about, I taught a course about this in Austin. I don't even remember my address in Austin, so this is all relearned stuff. Anyway, we're going to first look at the schedule. This is, like I said, this is new quarter, new. We're going to have from now through February 25th. There's 13 weeks there, and we'll have 12 weeks. There's a meeting that comes up in February, and then we'll try to go through according to the schedule. There's 2 weeks when we have to have two lessons, but they're actually short and related, so that shouldn't be too hard. And the other part, I know that we've had, if you remember, we've had recent classes on Daniel, on Jeremiah, the minor, so-called minor prophets, and the teachers of those classes are in this classroom, so feel free to share the wisdom and seriously help us to understand why this period of time matters and how it relates to what was written in the last part of the Old Testament. There's the handouts in the back it's got some maps, it's got a schedule and some other information. It's got a one chart from Nebuchadnezzar that we'll talk about a little bit tonight. This period of time, the between the testaments, Malachi, the end of it was about a 400 year period. Malachi was about 420 BC, and then the end of that period, we used to talk about the New Testament, was with the with John the Baptist. You know, the Gregorian calendar, I don't know if it counts BC, and now they say BCE and before the current era. Nonetheless, that's the period of time that we're going to talk about. And people call it the silent 400 years. And they call it that for a number of reasons, but the main reason is there's no record of direct dictation, conversations with God during that period of time. There's no writings that are in the canon. But it was anything but silent. Those years, you'll find as we go through, were tumultuous years. There was a lot of political upheaval. There was a lot of wars and rumors of wars and repeat wars. And there were changes in government, changes in religion, certainly social changes. And we're gonna look at those. And basically that's secular history, but that secular history relates to the history of the Jews, which relates to the history of Christians. And so that's the part that we're going to look at. And it was not silent. Just because there are no recorded writings doesn't mean there was no recorded influence, and that some of the recorded writings in the Old Testament come to pass in this period of time. And that's the important piece of it, to understand. We can understand where we are now, but to understand that this played an integral part in getting us to where we are at this point in time, in our understanding of the Word and the fulfillment of the prophecies in the Old Testament. The best thing I can say about it, this 400 years was part of God's plan from the beginning. God had a plan, and it still does. That included the silent period. Ephesians 3:9-10, or 9, that's where it talks about the manifold wisdom of God. All these things that have happened from Adam. I mean, he walked in the garden with Adam all the way to the ascension. That was all part of God's plan. And it says in Ephesians, again, it's the manifold wisdom. Manifold, you know what that was on a car, but manifold means many-folded, like a fan that's folded up, and then you unfold it, but it's manifold, many folds in it, and it unravels, unwinds at its given time, a time that was set by God, and the way that he chose to do it. You know, people think, why does this take so long? Why does it take so long to get from Adam in the garden to, frankly, the return of Christ? And we have to remember a number of things. That is that a day is as 1,000 years, right? And 1,000 years as a day to God. Time is a man construct. It's not something that's dictated by God. There's an end to this thing. You know, God had no beginning. The world had a beginning, but God had no beginning. The world has an end, but God has no end. He knows, and only he knows, when the end of the world is. So we should be prepared daily. We have announcements from up here about catastrophes and about people who are ill and people who have passed away. And, you know, we don't know when our day's coming, but it is coming, every single one, no matter how young you are, no matter how old you are. Again, a day is as 1,000 years. So we work on that. And that's part of the reason why, not just what we're going to study, but why we would study this, is to help us understand how we got to where we are. And I would also add it to be the, he talks about in the New Testament, we want to try to relate the Old Testament to the New Testament and this period in between both directions. But where it talks about that by reason of time, we should be eating meat, not drinking milk. Well, most of us in here are at that point. And this will give you, hopefully, an advanced understanding of the gospel, which is what really matters. You know, what happened in these political things doesn't matter. It's part of God's plan. It's been activated. It's already been happened. What we have is the New Testament, and that's we won't talk about that, about why we would even study this. Anybody have comments, questions, ideas, answers? All right. There's a number of records about this time, historical records. I know that like a Book of Maccabees, that's not part of the canon, but it's still a historical book. It's history worth worth reading. Perhaps it's not inspired, but it's still accurate historically, some of it. And there's things on the internet. You can use AI. That would be, you know, you can look and you can ask them a question. Tell me about Between the Testaments. And it will tell you a bunch of stuff, some of it true, that I encourage you to exercise the same skepticism on that you would on any other subject that you would get off the internet. You know, I learned just because it's on the internet doesn't make it true. Test it against the Bible. And even though this is a silent period, it wasn't silent before, and it wasn't silent after. And so if anything that you read between there is counter to before or after, it's not true. That's easy enough. They also say, well, why didn't you get any writings in here? First off, why is always a hard question. If you're going to ask me about God, why? We've heard the Isaiah quote a number of times. His ways are not my ways, my ways are not his ways, as the sky is above. That's how he is above us. So and we also know that even in the New Testament, that they talk about Jesus. And at the end of John, actually Sunday when we got through with John, that was the last part of it, was that if they had written everything that he did, that Jesus had done, the world could not even hold all the books. They didn't write everything. They wrote what we needed. We're thoroughly furnished for everything. But they wrote what we needed. And he did a bunch of other things. Jesus did. Well, God, over ever how many thousands of years this was, I mean, he had conversations with people that we know about. We know about him talking to Adam and to Moses and to a number of different people throughout the Old Testament. And then he sent his son. And then his son sent the Holy Spirit. That's what we're trying to relate. How does that fit in? So he didn't, there were periods of time in there from the beginning till, 420 BC, that God did things that were not recorded. He didn't write down everything he did. But the Bible does contain what we need to get us to the point of the New Testament and of understanding what it takes. Now, first off, we'll go back to this first lesson in here. In your book, the books are back there, and get one. It's relatively straightforward. It's not as detailed as you might think, but it's well written, and it's a good book. But the 400 silent years, I'm not going to read to you. I never did like that. I figured I'd learned to read in the first grade, and ever since then I've been able to. And so please look at that stuff, but I encourage you to look elsewhere. Like I said, Maccabees, Josephus writes about this period also. Even if he didn't live in that period, he writes about that period. So and I go back to the Old Testament. This is the pre-silent period. This first little bit, it's just a review of the history of Judaism, basically, but of politics and of governments and of empires that existed. You want to pass those out? Those are the handouts that are with them. It's got maps, it's got drawings and all that. Aaron?
I was going to take a stab at answering why. God hasn't given us a new revelation in the last 2,000 years either. And the reason he hasn't is because what we have in the revealed to us already is sufficient for us. If you look at the Jews as a nation, after they came back from exile, the primary thing that God wrote to them about from the time of the judges all the way through the pre-exilic period was idolatry. And when they came back, they had largely put away pagan idols. They didn't have, nationally speaking, another problem with pagan idolatry. So there wasn't anything new that God had to tell them. He had already given them the law. They already had the prophets. They already had the writings of Zechariah and Malachi during the temple restoration period that would help them through the next 400 years. And so until the time that Jesus came, there wasn't anything new for God to tell them. If you compound that with the fact that there may have been other miracles or occurrences that happened, but historically speaking, as you mentioned, we have secular historical references that talk about that time period. If you look at the rest of the Old Testament writings, there was what we have found as far as historical records go correlates with what's in the Bible, but is largely incomplete. We have things like the Cyrus cylinder and other things like that, but there isn't a good map, historical map of the time period other than what's in the Bible. That's kind of our best history of that whole period in terms of writings. And so God didn't need to give us history because we have secular history for that period, and God didn't need to tell the Jews anything new. And so that, I think, explains why there wasn't any new revelation in that 400 years. It's for the same reason that there hasn't been one for the past 2,000 years.
Anybody else, any ideas on either why it was silent or why we need to study it?
I don't know why. So that's not why I raised my hand. I think it's interesting that even the Jews of Jesus' day acknowledged that God had not seemed to have spoken through this time. That's not Christians looking back on and saying, well, it didn't fit in the canon. That's their, Josephus says that, and it says that in Maccabees. Silence, though, doesn't mean that God's not active, and I think we need to be careful about confusing those two. And that, to go to Aaron's point, God has been silent in the same sense since the closing of the New Testament canon, but that doesn't mean God has been inactive. And I think we confuse those things easily. And so a lot of the things that we're going to study, while we may not know exactly what God is doing or how, the people that he's working with, his own people, believe in him and trust in him and pray to him, he's still at work. And I think, I just want us to be careful not to confuse God. Even in our time, sometimes we'll talk about miracles, that God doesn't use men doing miracles in the same ways he did in the New Testament era or even before that. That doesn't mean that God's not at work anymore. And I just think that's a clarification we need.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, that answering why is it's an impossible question. Not a mind reader, but I can understand as much as I possibly can. And there were no writings during this time, but there were a number of writings about this time, before in the Old Testament and after in the New Testament. First empire that existed between the Testaments was the Babylonian Empire, and that was Nebuchadnezzar. And during that time in Daniel, two 31, I'm sorry. And they had a, he had a vision. He said initially it was a dream, but anyway, it was a vision. And anybody remember what that was? Head of gold and the breast of silver and the belly and the thighs of brass and legs of iron. And you remember what that was about? That was about the empires, right? So again, it was about this time. It was not during this time, but it was about this time. The head of gold was whom? Babylon, Babylonian Empire. And the silver was the Persian or Medo-Persian. And the bronze, or brass, I guess. And the legs of iron were Roman Empire, right? Okay. This was written before those were really existing. And again, if you'll go on the, you'll find, quote, Bible scholars that will say, well, this was added by a Catholic priest, you know, in about the year 1000 or something. No. This was part of God's plan, and this was a prophecy that was fulfilled, and that's one of the ways you tell whether somebody is a real prophet, if what they say is true. So this was true. If you got the pictures, the handouts, it's got the picture of Nebuchadnezzar, and I'm like everybody else, I'm hesitant to put pictures to things because that becomes more of your understanding, but it also helps remember what it looked like. And so, but that was a time when it was clearly not in this period, but it was detailed about this period between the Gospels. And I go back to the Maccabees book. I mean, that was a real revolution when the Maccabees fought back against the Persians. And they withstood them first, and then they overthrew them. And that they got back in, and we'll go through here, but the reestablishment, the Babylonians destroyed the temple. And then we came after that to the Persian period, which was Cyrus. And Cyrus was the, there are many, many books that say he was one of the greatest rulers of all time, not just of that particular empire. But by the way he handled people, by the way he handled his responsibilities, and by the way he treated the Jews and other people that had been made captive. They had started, he let the Jews, and I say Jew, it was Jew was used to describe Judah originally, and over time it's morphed to describe everybody that was a descendant of Jacob, of Israel. But they did start with the Persians. They did a number of things as far as allowing the Jews to return home first. You know, a small part went back. Then they were allowed to start rebuilding the temple that had been destroyed by the Babylonians, and they started that under. They have Darius the Mede, Darius the Great, Cyrus the Great. I think the best I can tell, Cyrus the Great and Darius the Great were probably the same person. Why are they different names, I can't explain. But that's, I think that's that's not just my idea. That's the idea of a number of people. But again, it's people. That's not an inspired finding. They in 2 Kings 22:8, that's where they rediscovered after the temple had been destroyed by the Babylonians, everything scattered, no stone on top of the stone, everything. And they found the lost book of the law in 2 Kings 22:8. And one of my favorite passages in the entire Old Testament is when they called them to bring the book. The people who had gone back to Jerusalem. And Ezra, the people stood up and Ezra read to them the book of the law, the Torah. And it showed back then, even on the part of the Persians, that there was an interest in God. And better for us and better for Judaism was there was a tolerance for a difference. There was a tolerance for a religion that was different than the one that the Persians had. They did not try to force the religion on as had the Babylonians. But they tolerated it. They gave the Jews a high level of independence. They didn't force them to do much of anything. And they let them have their own government. They let them have their own houses to build their own temple. They were the kind of people, I guess, that if you're gonna have a dictator, that'd be the one you'd want. It'd be the best I could figure it out. But they, one of the things they did, Darius the Great, you know, there's a big relief. It's in most of this took place in Iran, what's Iran now. And there's a big relief with Darius the Great. And it had, part of it was they call it now the Behistun Rock. The Behistun Rock is basically like the Rosetta Stone was for hieroglyphics. That's what it was for cuneiform. It gave them his story about how great he was and what all he had done and how he'd conquered everybody and all that. It was a big relief, but it was three, and there were three languages, two of them known. And the other one was the cuneiform, and it helped establish the understanding of what it was. The languages were, I don't remember, Babylonian and the old the cuneiform. And the reason again that makes a difference is that allowed them to put it into Greek. That was where it got to from there, cuneiform and then the Greek. And the reason that mattered, again, there were Jews in Egypt that had come from Greece. You know, that part of this was they destroyed, they fought with the Persians when they had beaten the Babylonians. They also expanded, and they expanded into Egypt, and they took on a big part of Egypt. And they dealt with the Greeks that were Jewish that had moved there, and they translated again. They were letting them have their religion without having somebody boss them around. They translated the Torah, the first five books of the Old Testament into Greek, into a Greek that served as the basis for our translation of the Old Testament. And so it Judaism got that. We got the translation the same as they did, and built everything in this was based off of the cuneiform Greek, and they that's an important piece. That's how you spread the word to different cultures and different people. That was an important, again, just a secular piece. It wasn't intended for religion. It was basically a political piece. But that was the key to translating the Bible so that normal, common people could read it, could have access to it. It's played a big role in us. The other thing, and it's worth knowing, again, the Persians, I go to Cyrus the Great. He was tolerant, he was understanding, and he was a builder. They built a whole bunch of things under him. And again, I read some things, talked about him being one of the best administrators of a government that was ever recorded. He ran the government without rebellion almost all the time. So he did that. He built, two capitals. He built a road, a royal road. You know, we think about the Roman road. Well, the Persian built a road. And the thing I found most interesting, and I didn't know, was that they built a canal between the Nile River and the Red Sea. That's not a small canal, but they built that back in whatever 450, 500 BC. By the way, you notice we don't have slides. We don't have them, so I have to read my own handwriting, and I will tell you, I always made straight A's except handwriting and conduct. And so this I'm having to, Lou Ann's about the only one who can read my writing. The Persian period, I said Darius the Great, and then they had Xerxes from 486 to 464 BC. And I think we talked before, he was the same as phonetically it is Ahasuerus. Not necessarily a good person. It was a translation of the Torah from Hebrew to Greek, took place under him, and that was all crucial again to the, it became, the Septuagint became the primary source of the Old Testament, and also for the early Christian church. Septuagint, that means 70. Evidently 72 scribes basically translated that, translated the Hebrew to Greek, and Septuagint became the name. The one thing, that's the period of time that the Book of Esther, we had a course on Esther, and you remember, that's the one book in the Bible that doesn't mention God, is Esther. But that was during the Xerxes time. Following him, there was Artaxerxes, Artaxerxes. That was the time, again, where they let more of the Jews go from Babylon to go from exile. They were in exile in general, to go back to Jerusalem. That's where they the time during which they built the temple. That was they built the walls of Jerusalem around that, and Persian rule continued in that area for another 100 years after that. And they were well suited to be the rulers. They tolerated the religion, laid the groundwork for a healthy population, laid the groundwork for an educated population that, again, was part of God's plan to get to where we are today. That was the, across the, in their downfall, again, it's like a first, let me back up. If you look at the time period of those of the different empires, and this is just my opinion, but if you look at the time period of those empires, they were short. They were relatively short, and very close to what our age as a country is. And they all had their downfalls and disappeared for various reasons. Most of the time it ended up being pride or avarice or greed and or a search for power. And that was just something I was struck by, was how short a period of time all these great empires. Rome lasted longer than the rest of them, but even Rome's not here either. So that's something that we can look at. What Persia did is they tried to expand. They did expand. They expanded into Europe, into Greece. Remember, again, they came out of Iran, but they went into Greece, and they were trying to expand there and gradually take them over, either from the inside out or just with sheer power. But the Greeks wouldn't have it, and they pushed them back across the Aegean Sea, back into Egypt. And again, that's where the Hellenists, where the Greek Jews were. They pushed them all the way out, and eventually they conquered all the territory that was held by Persia, and they settled in that. And the Egyptian Jews got the Septuagint, which laid the foundation for us. And that was the end of the Old Testament. And the beginning of the so-called silent period was when the Greeks had pushed Persia back into nothingness, basically, but it pushed them out of all of their territory, and that empire ceased to exist. The rest of it is the silent period, and again, I encourage you to not think of it as silent period. We'll call it the time between the testaments, because again, that was a dynamic time. It shaped the political shaped religious, shaped the social landscape into what Jesus and John the Baptist and all of us stepped into 2,000 something years ago. So again, it's one of those things that it's easy to pass over because we don't. I imagine very few of you have taken Middle Eastern history. If you have, let me know. That is the birth of a civilization that led to our civilization. We have to give them credit. Anybody have any comments and questions, statements? Pray for Curtis, please. I do that every night.